You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information. The views and opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent those of the network, its advertisers, owners, or sponsors.
Welcome to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Now, your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan.
Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And we are back with another edition of the M Squared TechCast on this exceptionally hot and steamy afternoon.
Yeah, it's like Florida out
there. So, yeah, if you're listening to this months later in the winter, remember this day fondly because
it's very hot.
You'll be freezing your butt off. It's like 100 degrees outside and it's just ugly. Yes. But we've got a great show for you here today. We're going to talk about angel capital and its crucial role in starting new ventures. We're going to talk about managed services, which is obviously cloud technology, hot topic right now. And then we're going to talk cybersecurity and get the living crap scared out of us by our old pal Richard Steenan. And then we're going to talk patent law and intellectual property, how you can keep your stuff safe if you are a tech company. First, we want to welcome a couple of folks who have a longtime friend of the show, David Weaver of Great Lakes Angels, also Daron York. Welcome, gentlemen. I guess our first topic is you guys are starting a new angel fund?
Or have started, actually, right?
Yeah. Yes, July 1st, Doran and I partnered to actually launch Great Lakes Angels Fund. We're evolving from the angel group that had meetings first in the States starting in 2002 to forming a fund so that we get more people into this space. As you know, Matt and Mike, you've come to our meetings. Some great deals get in front of the group, and sometimes they don't move fast enough. And they collectively don't have enough money to keep this thing going. So by putting a fund in place, we got more investors in the pool to spread the risk over a lot of deals and be more things than they could ever be on their own.
Now, I'm familiar with how you used to be, where you had to have anybody, well, just they have to be a qualified investor, number one.
Right.
But number two, they had to say they were going to put up $25,000 a year in investments. So what's different about what you're doing now?
Well, it was always individual decisions before. You write a check on your own account for each and every deal. And normally if you write one check, you have to expect to do a round later. So you keep dry powder. A lot of times the folks were, if the only one was really interested in the deal, they were too timid to move out on their own, especially having done a lot of deals with experience-wise. Being in a fund, the minimum in the fund is a lot different to be in the fund. And it has to be a credit investor. It has to be $100K as a minimum in that. So
that each individual invests is $100,000,
right. Or a family office or individual investors, and that way they can be in the $18 million fund we want to build. They can be in a lot of different deals. They don't have to worry about dry powder. We're the ones that do the due diligence, the term sheets, all the negotiations. They get the benefit of seeing their money deployed in a lot of high-tech companies, helping to build the base here in Michigan, and with all the expectations of a pretty decent ROI at the end. That's why we're all in it.
And so it's a limited partnership? Is that what it is, essentially, or what?
Fund structure is different in a syndication. The fund is, some can actually say it's like a venture fund, but this difference between this angel fund and a VC fund, that pretty much consists of angel investors. So a fund operating in a way that there's a fund manager, you commit the money to the fund, the individual investor has no say about what investment we're going to make. They just, the fund manager make the decision. So there's no different than an index fund you put in a stock market. The decision is as the fund manager. The individual investors have no say about any particular deal. So they need to trust the overall structure and overall intention of the fund. So that's the difference between a syndication and a fund, is that you don't have to convince individual investors and wait until they make a decision. You have the commitment, you have the money, you make the decision when you see fit.
Move a lot faster as a fund than you can individuals as well. Oftentimes they 60, 90 days, and then they come to know, or if they come to a decision, they're still doing due diligence longer, and it frustrates the companies.
Sure. Now, David, you founded the first venture or angel group in Michigan, Great Lakes Angels, back when? When was that?
2002.
2002, okay. There are now angel groups all over the state, but there still is a inadequacy, isn't there, of seed-level funding?
Yeah, Dorn and I, a few months back, known each other for a while, but a few months back, we were both commiserating about the lack of angel capital in the state. There's lots of VCs in the state, and sometimes their capital has to go outside the state because they don't have enough companies funded in the state to farm to get to them. And in talking to university folks and private sector and angel groups around the state, say there's a shortage of angel capital in the state. You know, we need more money to keep these folks here in the state with jobs coming out of university or out of the private sector, stuff like that. So thanks to Doran, he decided to get aggressive with the largest fund in the state so far for angel groups, $18 million. And that's going to be a lot of money to help get these companies going.
Go ahead.
Well, the reality of it, if you look at anything from Silicon Valley to Chicago, New York, every successful entrepreneurial ecosystem, especially in the tech space, they all started by angel investors.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest company we know, if it's Amazon, if it's Salesforce is a classic story. He went to every VC in Silicon Valley and they said no. And foreign angel investor actually launched the company. So in Michigan, which in my view is the hottest market in the U.S. right now.
Really?
In many different ways. In order to spark the companies not only to being created in Michigan but stay in Michigan, you need the angel community to move. The moment there's a lot of angel activities, the VC is now finding themselves here, and then they can fund the growth of the company. So there's angel groups in Michigan, but there's only one or two angel funds in Michigan, and that's what the biggest thing is missing right now.
Right.
Actually, I was just going to ask the question, and I looked at your notes, and I was going to say, and what do you want to invest in? So you've got fintech, automotive, technology, motion, which would be mobile, I assume?
Mobility, yeah.
Right. Okay.
It's a new category called technology and motion, anything that moves.
Okay. medical and health, B2B, blockchain, wearable, ag tech. So the usual suspects there. So what sort of levels of investment are we talking? I mean, your typical angel round could be a couple hundred thousand maybe. Is that something?
Again, I want to make sure I bust that myth about that angels usually come up with the smaller amount of investment.
250 or whatever, right? You know, 50,000 or whatever the number is, right?
No. First of all, we don't put any cap on it. Secondly, I think we can go up to one, even $2 million angel investment.
So you're really almost like a venture capital fund then.
Yes, but the difference is it come from a different type of investors. Right. VCs are very more calculated, angels are less. But if you do it to a fund, it doesn't matter if you take $1 million round, but it's spread over a number of people. But this is a myth. In Silicon Valley, New York, angel fund can go up to $5 million.
Uh-huh. Really? So, I didn't know that.
So what is it? I'm intrigued by something you said earlier. What is it that makes you think that Michigan is the hottest market in the country for this?
We did some study for other businesses and other purposes. If you compare New York, Chicago, California, even Austin, Texas, dollar to dollar to do business in Michigan is still the most cost-effective way to do it. Two, Michigan government, not getting into politics, is very pro-business. There's a lot of incentive. There's a lot of excess capacity in Michigan that got declined over the years. If we talk about manufacturing, micro-manufacturing, there's a certain knowledge base in Michigan that you can't find any other place. I mean, when Elon Musk declared 6 years ago that San Diego is going to be the mecca of autonomous driving, Michigan proved it wrong. Everything came back to Michigan because still, I mean, Michigan is the kind of the founding father of innovation in this country.
Well, so, the brains of the automotive industry is still here, whether you like it or not. Right. You know, so.
Yeah. So the cost of doing business in Michigan, it's still one of the most attractive one in the country.
Yeah, I mean, just the housing thing. A friend of mine, Rachel Conrad, I used to work with at the Free Press,
sure,
bought a 3-bedroom ranch in Santa Clara for $1.4 million.
We were looking for an office in Chicago, and we went for the mainstream to a little bit off things, and I think the average per square foot we got is like about $31 or $32 square foot. I probably can get $6 square foot in Farmington Hills.
So, well, I just got to do something about the weather now. We've got to figure that part out. Now, of course, with global warming, it's getting, as we know from today, it's certainly getting warmer up here.
Yeah, it's more like Louisville, Kentucky here than Detroit.
Dang, yeah.
Yep. So you talk about the level. Obviously, there's a lot of money in Southeast Michigan.
Right.
How do you convince that money to sort of get off the sidelines and get invested in this? Because you're talking to people who are, you know, pretty much independently wealthy, and they can take a flyer. They can part with a little bit of, you know, and at the same time maybe build some really great companies and have the satisfaction of knowing that they did that, right? That's how you approach it?
I think the media covering more of the success stories of early-stage companies having access and raising capital right here in Michigan makes a big difference. And knowing there's a fund available allows people to get into it and be a passive investor, which most of them are anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw a lot of money sitting on the sidelines in Great Lakes Angels waiting to do something, but they didn't know how, didn't know the negotiation parts of it and everything like that. But getting into a fund that deals exclusively in this space could draw, hopefully, we want to get the word out to a lot of folks to get active in this and have fun with us. We're looking to put some capital in some very exciting companies. And oftentimes the companies need mentorship.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the companies could probably even be used by the people in the investments as their own technology to help that company.
It is also one fact that everybody needs to be aware of. Last year, I think it started, and it's going to continue for another 2 years. There's a significant amount of baby boomer retiring right now.
Mm-hmm.
And all of them want to retire, i.e. not having a full-time job, but they still want to be active. And they want to be active beyond just putting in money. They want to mentor. They want to participate. And they are business creators. So there's a greater amount of money available in the marketplace right now than any time before.
Wow. How big is the fund so far? I know you just started July 1. What do you got together so far?
We didn't sign any commitment yet just because we finalized the paperwork, but we got in the neighborhood of about $3 or $4 million of commitment, verbal commitment already.
That's pretty good. Mm-hmm. Pretty good.
And the aim of the fund, 18, is there anything magic about that figure? Or is that just something you figure you could reach?
Yeah, that's to do with me, is that, you know, in Judaism, 18 symbolized life. So it's a significant number.
Is that what it is? Yeah. I didn't know that. So, 2018 as well, right? So
yep.
We got about 2 minutes left. So you know, we got everybody all lathered up. They're all excited. They want to get those checkbooks out. I know, Matt, you've probably got $100,000 in your checkbook, right?
Sure.
Okay. LTU types.
Well, on that point,
TIAA Cref would frown on me doing anything.
Really? Yeah. On that point, people can pool their money together,
to make a unit.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. They've done that in even individual angel groups to put somebody needs $50,000 and they only want to do 10 each, something like that, get five people together. So, I mean, people will pull their money together, come in at $100,000.
Just one unit, but it would be split over. Okay, yeah. Makes sense. So getting back to the how do they reach you kind of question is what I was leading up to.
They should go to the website, which is citysideventure.com, and then they can go to the fund page and look at Great Lake Angel Fund and see all the information.
Ah. Okay.
Okay, once again, that web address, Mr. Brennan, sir.
It is Cityside
Ventures.
Ventures.com.
Okay.
Should they reach out to you, Doran, or not?
Either to me or David, yes.
Okay, and that'd be dyork at CitysideVentures.com. And we'll put that, when we post this up on the website, we'll put the rest of the particulars in there for you.
All right.
No problem. So,
thanks very much for joining us today, gentlemen. Best of luck to you.
We hope
you
pleasure.
We hope you build a lot of great companies.
Yeah, us too.
We'll be back with another segment of the M Squared TechCast in just a moment. For right now, this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're indeed listening to the M Squared TechCast at PodcastDetroit.com.
Lawrence Technological University graduates earn a degree and a higher starting salary. In fact, when it comes to earning potential, the Brookings Institution ranks LTU fifth among U.S. colleges and universities. Be enriched. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
As a Lawrence Technological University graduate, you're not only marketable, you're worth more. Yes, more. According to payscale.com, when it comes to graduate salaries, LTU is in America's top 100. Be invaluable. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Go you ahead. Start.
It's Matt Rouse.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to the M Squared TechCast right here at thepodcastdetroit.com.
Yep.
Time for segment two of today's show. We've got with us here, we've got Jim Karp, Director of Consulting at Raymond, which is a CPA accounting and advisory firm.
Big company.
But they have just made a big purchase.
Yeah, earlier this year, actually, Raymond acquired Trivalent Group out of Granville, which is a Grand Rapids suburb. And, geez, being from that side of the state, Larry Andrus and I go way back. He was still is, I'm sure, part of the Trivalent Group. And I talked to the folks at Raymond earlier about what they were going to do, and they're phasing it all in. But
Trivalent really was one of the IT services pioneers in West Michigan. They were a big deal over there.
Yeah. So, Jim, I guess we're going to be talking a little bit about Trivalent and how it's been ranked as a top 100 MSP, which stands for Managed Service Provider, in the world, right?
Correct. And thank you for having me.
So talk a little bit about that. Actually, since I know you were the one that helped put this deal together, it's not on the notes that you sent us, but let me ask that question anyway. I'd like the backstory on that. I know Larry, from past experience, had been looking to get into Southeast Michigan for a long time. He was just not finding the right vehicle. But beyond that, I was surprised when I heard that he sold the company to Raymond. So how did that all come about?
Okay. So, yeah, thanks again for the opportunity to be here. We at Raymond, we're focused on our clients and their success. As long as they're successful, we're going to be viable going into the future. And Larry looked at it from that perspective for him as well. As we look to the future, we know that the value proposition is changing in the marketplace. There's a lot of challenges that are out there for the clients. So about 5 years ago, Raymond went on a journey. And the journey was to say, what is that future business model? In essence, kind of like a Wayne Gretzky play. Where's the puck going to go? And how do we get there? And so as a direct result of that, we went out and started talking to quite a few technology companies, and we'll get into more of the details as this unfolds with their conversation. And we knew that our clients are looking for assistance with the technology. Larry's team was very successful, still is very successful, and Larry's going to be a big part of the success going forward for us for the next couple of years as well. So, you know, for example, one thing that really attracted us to the Trivalent group is they've been in the top 100 managed service providers for the last 8 years. Raymond's in the top 40 CPA firms. There's over 4,000 CPA firms. So when you kind of look at the two organizations, both successful in their own domains, what our thought was is that we can take one plus one and make it into three and provide something that doesn't exist today. So we got similar cultures, values, as well as operating philosophies. And so far, we're off to a good start.
Okay, Matt, you want to take question two?
Sure. I'm just curious, with the focus on customers, what are some of the challenges that you see out there for customers as they're dealing with IT services and basically how Trivalent can help with those?
Well, you guys see it every day, and all the clients out there as well, is there's complexity in the marketplace now. There are so many tools. There's a proliferation of tools that are out there. And then also you look at it, the pace of change is changing quickly too. If you're paying attention to all of the technology news, on a continual basis, there's introductions all the time of new information that's coming out and availability of different tools along those lines. So with that comes security risks. And so, you know, if you look at all the tools, you got mobile tools, everything's been introduced into the marketplace. And with all of those introductions come opportunities for, unfortunately, bad actors to come in. Now, the other aspect of it is, too, is the costs are definitely rising as time has gone on. So it's becoming more and more expensive. The risks are definitely increasing. And then if you want to run your own IT shop, for example, you have to first attract the right resources. You have to be able to train them and then make sure that you retain them on a go-forward basis. So with all that swirl in the mix of everything, a lot of people right now are finding it extremely challenging to keep their data and information safe. And that's pretty much where what attracted us to Trivalent. They've got that managed service provider. They can come in and do that part of the aspect of everything. So far, it's been real, real productive, and things have gone real well.
Well, staffing also becomes a big challenge for companies trying to do their own IT services, right?
Oh, absolutely. And you know, the thing is, too, is with technology, it's not like one size fits all. So, you know, if you look at the medical field, you have like maybe a family practitioner, but then think of all the specialties that have been developed over the years. And that's because of our sophistication with medicine's increasing. Well, the same thing's happening with technology. It's very difficult if you are an entrepreneur, or let's say, you know, a company of, let's say, 100 employees or less, or let's say 500 employees or less. It's hard to find a resource. And then is it realistic to expect that person to be a master of several different disciplines? And as the security risks have gone up, the bar has even gone up further. So it's pretty tough today to find a universal associate that can meet all the needs from an IT perspective, let alone keep them trained and provide them the tools at a costly basis.
Huh. With all these challenges, Jim, how can Trivalent and Raymond help?
Okay, so Trivalent has basically four areas where they play into space: managed services, and then there's managed networks, professional services, and then as well as if you're interested in getting products, you can purchase whatever you need from a technology perspective there. So pretty much today, if you're an entrepreneur and you want to remain focused on your business, doing what you do best, you can take a lot of your technology needs, flip them right over to the Trivalent team, and they can manage your networks, help you with your communication, help with all of the emails, everything, help desk, things break down. Now, with the Raymond Group, what we also do is we have a cybersecurity team that's been out. It's been in practice for about 14 years. We focus in on a lot of community banks and doing a lot of cybersecurity risk reviews and being able to pinpoint where the data is important and how you protect it. So if you combine both Raymond and our traditional skill sets along with the Trivalent, we're going to be adding some to the whole mix there. Now, the other thing is, too, is we're talking about the value proposition, how we got here. We've been doing bookkeeping for years. And so one of the things that Raymond did several years ago is we took the accounting into the cloud. So now we can be your chief financial officer, your controller, or your bookkeeper. You can look at your information on your mobile device at the convenience when you want. So that's the first thing. Second thing is we launched a human capital management practice about 3 years ago and put that into the cloud as well. So Raymond can be your HR director all the way down to your payroll clerk. And now by bolting on the Trivalent team and bringing them into the space, you can then look at it from a technology perspective. So pretty much in the marketplace, as we talked about at the beginning, our focus on the client, we can help them from an accounting and HR as well as an IT perspective, free up those entrepreneurs to let them do what they do best and go out and take care of their business.
Let me get a little bit of background about Raymond. When was the company founded and where, and where do you have locations now?
Okay, so Raymond started 76 years ago, started up in Saginaw, Michigan. The headquarters today are down in the Troy area. We've got 18 offices throughout the state of Michigan. We're also down in Ohio, as well as we have 6 offices down in Florida. And it's your traditional CPA firm. You've got the assurance, the tax, and really where our focus is on business advising. So the big value proposition going forward for clients is to say, I have this data. Now, what does it mean, and how can I manage my business better? And that's what we strive to do,
and
to be able to take care of that.
Roughly the number of employees?
Well, with the Trivalent team now, we're just shy of 900.
Okay.
And we're anticipating about $140 million in revenue this year.
Wow.
And how big was Trivalent? How many people did that add to?
About 84 people when they joined us.
That's big for an IT shop, yeah.
Oh, absolutely. These guys are great. And that's what got us so excited. As a matter of fact, Larry will laugh when I tell you this. But first time I showed up to sit down and chat with Larry, first thing that came out of his mouth is, you're here as a courtesy to our board of directors. They've asked me to talk to you. And secondly, we're not for sale. And the good thing was, is as we started our dialogue and we did the dance for about 16 months, it became evidently clear it was a win for both organizations and ultimately for our clients. Because now, by combining our efforts, that value proposition is stronger, and we can provide more value and enable them to grow themselves as well.
Okay, so I've got to ask the what's known around here is the Matt Rausch question.
The Matt Rausch question.
And that is,
okay.
are you hiring, and if so, for what skill sets? What are you looking for these days? And where are you challenged to find people?
Actually, the answer is that we will be hiring, and it's going to be across the board from a technology perspective. And I would anticipate, let's see, what we're probably third quarter here. I'm thinking the fourth quarter. We'll definitely be putting a whole bunch of stuff out in the paper. So we don't have any open recs right now. But to be honest with you, we anticipate a lot of significant growth in the near term. And we'll be looking for a lot of people from a networking perspective, a communications perspective, a security perspective across the board. And one thing where we're headed to yet, which we haven't had a chance to talk about, is in the marketplace, by combining Raymond as well as Trivalent, we've got a skill set now to be what they call a managed security service provider. And we'll have the deepest and broadest breadth within the state of Michigan to be able to do that. And really what that does now is it takes that managed service provider to that next level and helps the client by managing their security with and for them to reduce their risks. So that's going to be a key differentiator in the marketplace. And really, from a Raymond perspective, the big part of the journey that we started is we started this journey because we knew that it's dangerous to be doing business out there on the internet. It's tough. They're wide open. And we now have a solution where we can tighten up everything for them and allow them to securely and safely conduct their business. And that's going to be key going forward to manage and safeguard their data.
All right. So what should business owners do to protect themselves, Jim? I mean, you've just talked about all the stuff that you got coming into play here, but what's the next step for businesses?
So, you know, I think the most important thing you can do is educate yourself. A couple of years ago, I've been acting as the CIO for many years for our firm and transitioned that job. And when I talked to our CEO, I said, "Are you sleeping well at night?" And he said, "Yeah, I'm sleeping great." And I said, "Well, you shouldn't be." And the reason is because there was so much stuff going on from a security perspective. So I think the first thing you need to do, if you own a business, you got to get up to speed on it. And it's relatively easy. You can go to different conferences. There's a lot of information out on YouTube that you can look at. There's a lot of professional organizations that can help. There's a lot of simple things that you can do as a business owner, and I won't go into the detail here today, that you can do to protect yourself. But then also there's a lot of things that you'd want to consider bringing other people in. So, you know, for example, there's the Michigan Cybersecurity Conference. It's going to be held in October over at the Amway Grand here in Grand Rapids. And my suggestion would be is to sign up for that conference. I know that there's a conference in the greater Detroit area that's sponsored for this as well. And that's just to make sure that you get out and understand. And there's a lot of very simple things, very, very simple disciplines that can be instilled that are not technological that your average associate can do to make sure that you safeguard your data. I'd strongly urge everybody to get out there and do that.
This conference in Grand Rapids, though, I mean, the one that they have at Cobo, is that still going to be going on? Is this an adjunct to that?
Yes, my understanding is, and I don't have the full details on that one, but my understanding is that is, I think, in the February timeframe. And my understanding is there's still a plan for that one to go. We've got one on the west side of the state as well, and that's in the October timeframe. Either case, there's a lot of information that's out there. It's easy to digest, and it's easy to take action on, and can really significantly enhance your security posture.
All right. And go ahead, Matt.
Well, I was just going to ask, if people want more information on any of this, please, now's the time to tell them how to get a hold of you, because we've got about a minute left.
Perfect. The best way to reach out to me is james.carp@raymond.com.
And that's
Carp is with two P's.
Yep, C-A-R-P-P.
J-A-M-E-S, C-A-R-P-P, and Raymond's R-E-H-M-A-N, that's double N as in Nancy, .com. And we'll get you to the right people. And I know you guys said that you know Larry. He's a great guy. He's well-known over in the Grand Rapids market. You can always reach out to the Trivalent team. They've got a lot of dynamic solutions, and they'd welcome the opportunity to come in and provide you some feedback.
Okay. And is Larry going to stick around for, a couple of years during this transition?
Absolutely. And the door's open for it. We know that we got him at least for two, and we're hoping for more.
Okay.
He's definitely a great asset to the organization.
All right. Thanks very much, James Carp, Director of Consulting at Raymond, discussing how their acquisition of Trivalent Group has helped them expand their services and has helped Trivalent expand to new geographic areas. We'll be right back in just a moment with more of the M Squared TechCast. For right now, this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to the M Squared TechCast.
What do you get at Lawrence Technological University? Everything. Great labs and studios, supportive professors, plus a full campus life, NAIA athletics, and all the software you need to succeed. Be smart. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Lawrence Technological University is all about opportunities. You learn beyond the campus, doing real-world research for top companies and honing your skills through co-ops and internships. Apply what you learn. Be challenged. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Hey, it's Matt Roush.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to this week's edition of the M Squared TechCast right here at the PodcastDetroit.com network. We're in the Royal Oak Studios, but they've got studios all over the place now.
Yeah, just, we have our studio director here. I know they have downtown Detroit now, is that
yep,
right?
Yep, down at the shipping building. That's not open to the public yet. We're still putting final touches on it.
I know I had some big party last week, and I just didn't get a chance to come in for it. So that was right. To celebrate something, but what was that?
It was just a, soft opening for people that were already with the network to come and check it out.
Got
so
it. Okay. Yeah. All right.
Should so that was soon.
You're all wondering when that Jessica Cam is going to come. She's blocking it right now. She won't let us do it.
Yeah, she has something draped in front of it here. Yeah. It's in a secure, undisclosed location.
We're going to surprise her one of these days. But okay. Speaking of surprises, we have with us on the line Richard Steenan, a longtime friend of mine and I on the show. Gosh, so many titles for Richard, the former founder of RustNet, and now he's the cybersecurity whiz who's come on the show to scare us about them dang Russians once again.
Published novelist,
Bon vivant, man about town.
Well-known street fighter, as Sonny Elliott used to say. Right. Yeah, okay. Right. Richard, with that, welcome. Boy.
Yeah, don't stop. Keep going. This is great.
So are you working out of the man shed in the back there? Is that where you are today?
That's exactly where I am. I'm watching the rats feed underneath the bird feeder. Kind of upsetting.
We had to. My wife and I actually had to stop feeding birds because we were getting more rats than birds in Dearborn. So really? That wasn't fun either. Yeah.
Wow.
So anyway, yeah. Richard. Speaking of rats,
nice segue.
Smooth transition there, boy. So what's the latest in the security world? What should we be afraid of at this point?
Yeah, RAT, Remote Access Trojan. So we should be paying a lot of attention to the extensive indictments served up by Robert Mueller's team on Friday, the 13th. It's probably one of the most descriptive and revealing discussions of Russian hacking into the U.S. Political system to impact the vote in 2016. And it's kind of breathtaking in the amount of details that they reveal, because normally us on the outside of the intelligence community don't get to see where their attribution comes from. And we don't get to see the details. So it lets us know just what kind of stuff they're collecting. But from the details against these 12 Russian members of the GRU, which is Russia's military intelligence branch, we see that our intelligence community is able to actually eavesdrop on the computers that the agents are using in order to engage in their spear phishing attacks against the hundreds of staffers at the Democratic National Committee, the types of malware that they use. The family malware was internally developed and worked across a broad spectrum of systems, including desktops and cell phones. And then we also saw that they use jump servers throughout the world and in the United States, violating many laws in the process to orchestrate their attacks and exfiltrate the stolen emails that have made history. And we see that they paid for them with Bitcoin, and they could backtrack the account holders and tie it all together by following the digital money. All really, really remarkable work. And people go, oh my gosh, where was the FBI all this time? How come we didn't hear about this before? before. And it's my contention, well, this isn't the FBI's work that we're seeing. We are actually getting a glimpse into the sorts of things that the NSA is capable of doing and does every single day. And you have to start thinking, well, why did they allow Mueller to reveal all this in a public document, the indictment? And then, in a sense, it's a shot across the bow, warning the GRU and the rest of Russian operatives that we're there, we're watching. So you try this again coming up on the November elections, you know, there's probably a better chance of us detecting and stopping these types of activities, because it's for sure, you know, bound to be repeated. Right?
Yeah,
so coming up on an election cycle.
It's interesting. I heard somebody describe this indictment, and it's 20-some pages, as a story indictment, and that it tells a story. I mean, it really reads like a novel almost.
Yeah. It's a narrative, and like all good stories, it leaves us hanging wanting to read the next installment. And the people I see talking about it on Twitter are talking about the unnamed businesses and the unnamed Americans.
Well, we kind of know who those are, though, don't we?
People have been filling
Roger
the blanks.
Roger Stone, I think his name is. Yes, so, yeah.
Yeah, Roger Stone is definitely self-identified as one of the parties.
Yep.
And WikiLeaks would be another one.
Oh, yeah, Julian.
And then I just saw right up that the next indictments will probably be against those people.
Well, I'm even hearing that they may try to indict Putin. I don't think that's going to go very far. And nor do I think Putin is going to extradite these 12 GRU agents, right? You know, so.
Yeah. Yep. And after seeing Twitter blow up this morning after the press conference between Putin and Trump, people are calling for all sorts of drastic action. People are pretty upset.
Yeah, I mean, how can you still call this a witch hunt? I don't get it. You know,
this was a
direct and premeditated attack on our electoral process. How can you call it anything else?
You can't be that dumb, right? As it gets back to, what do the Russians have on our president? I guess that's what it gets back to, right? So.
They don't need anything if there's a quid pro quo, so rather than the stick, it could be the carrot, right? Mm-hmm. And whatever that could possibly be.
Well, it's just the beginning. I think it'll be interesting to see over the summer where this whole thing goes and when the next shoe falls. Interesting they pick Friday the 13th, right before confab between the two world leaders.
Yeah,
right?
I don't think that's any coincidence.
No.
No. Yeah, and I don't think, we don't have to wait long for the next shoe to drop. I suspect that this week there'll be things that top the news that we're talking about now.
So Richard, I just wanted to ask you, they used you know, some fairly sophisticated spear phishing techniques to do this, to get, you know, into people's accounts. What should people be on the lookout for so that they don't fall victim to this? I guess that's the practical question here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's kind of, you can find the particular domains that GRU use and registered. So you can go through your emails and search to see if you've been a target. I've done that and kind of disappointed that I never was.
Oh, rats,
Yeah. And obviously for all, you know, cyber criminals and all the rest, spear phishing is still the most common way that they use to attack. I think Proofpoint says 70% of all breaches start with spear phishing. So you'd be suspicious of any email you receive that's got a link on it to click. Yep. Even if it's, you know, you're in the process of refinancing your home and your mortgage broker sends you something to click, be very, very suspicious. Hover over it first to see if you can see where the URL actually leads. Make sure it's going to the right place. Never, ever respond to something asking you to reset your password.
Oh, God, yes.
And be very suspicious of all your friends that send you stuff.
out of the blue.
Kind of inexplicable.
Right? Yeah, right.
Out of the blue, right?
Makes no sense. Generally, what I do at what I do at that point is I send them an email and say, "Did you just send me an email?" You know, and you know, just see what was going on.
Yep. And so, quite often, it's spoofed accounts it's coming from, so it's not actually your friend. And you can see those because there's usually a bunch of people CC'd, and it looks alphabetical.
Oh yeah, right? So alphabetical
on the list, and your and your name's in there.
Yes.
And,
I got one over the weekend on somebody that said that they dropped a Trojan into my account because I surfed an adult website and they seized my operating system. And number one, I don't look at adult websites, so I was intrigued by it. And sent it off to my webmaster to look at, and he just said, "Don't worry about it. It's just somebody just sending them out to lots of different people to see who will bite." You know. So.
Yep. And the phone spam messages are getting pretty aggressive too. My wife got one where, you know, they left a message that, you know, they're threatening legal action if she didn't do something. You know, she posted to Facebook and a bunch of her friends got the same message. So that's another thing you do. Post to Facebook. People will tell you right away. I always, take the company or wherever it came from and you just do a Google search on that plus scam. And you'll always find other people who succumb to the same thing.
See, the ones I get are always the really crude, amateurish ones. You know,
misspellings.
Like when it's written in essentially pidgin English, and there's, you know, they're missing articles and stuff like that. So it's clear that, you know, English is not the first language of whoever put this together. Yeah, so, they're really obvious that way.
So I met a guy from Nigeria at a big conference, and he explained why that is. It's an intelligence filter. They only want gullible, stupid people to respond.
Really?
So if you respond to such a poorly written email, you're a primary target.
Hmm.
So that's why they spend a lot of effort making it in proper English. The people Nigerian scammer has got a degree in law in all in English.
So he knows how to write a paragraph properly. You're right. Yeah.
Exactly. And he writes them improperly on purpose.
Mm. I was glad to know over the weekend I got another one of those from Nigeria that said I won $2.5 million, but I didn't respond to them. So
I guess it's going to be the M tech cast pretty soon. You're going to retire.
Yeah. Right. Please respond.
Wire the money out of the M2 podcast funds to get it started. You'll be all set.
Yeah. All he wants is $400. What could go wrong?
What could go wrong?
Yep.
So speaking
of things that could go wrong, there's another incident on Friday the 13th, where Dan Coats, who's, you know, a former senator from Illinois, who's now the director of the National Intelligence Agency, the DNI, he was testifying and he was warning that in his words, the red lights are blinking. They're seeing ongoing Russian hacking activity against our critical infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of that might just be, you know, referring to the malware that we've seen, dark energy and all the rest in our critical infrastructure, our power grid, which they've been alerting on for almost a year now.
Yep.
But it could also be hey, you know, we're seeing heightened activity, which I'm constantly thinking, okay, we're pretty surprised that a intelligence agency during the 2016 elections we know they all hack, right? Just like we hack them. But the next step of revealing and leaking stolen information, that's an active measure, right? That is taking action with the information that you've stolen. And so I try and spend some time thinking about, well, you know, if they're thinking like attackers as they are, how could they escalate? How could they go beyond that? You know, what could you do to ensure that you influence the elections in the way you wanted to the next time? So for sure, we should be keeping our eyes open for more embarrassing leaks of personal information about candidates.
Okay.
You know,
Richard, we're going to have to leave it there.
It'll be horrible, right? It'll be...
I could literally talk to you about this for another hour, but unfortunately we've reached the end of the segment, so we're going to have to leave it there. Richard Steen, and Richard, real quick, how do people get a hold of you for more information on cybersecurity?
Just look me up on Twitter. My Twitter handle is Cyberwar.
All right, Richard Steenan, cybersecurity expert and longtime friend of the M Squared TechCast, with more information to turn your hair gray. Mine already is, though, so anyway. But right now, this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to the M Squared TechCast.
Lawrence Technological University is more than a school. It's a launchpad for your future, offering industry-leading facilities and 100-plus programs that are ranked among the nation's best. Be unstoppable. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Lawrence Technological University graduates earn a degree and a higher starting salary. In fact, when it comes to earning potential, the Brookings Institution ranks LTU fifth among U.S. colleges and universities. Be enriched. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And we're back with today's final segment on the M Squared TechCast. We have with us today a partner in the Southfield office of the law firm Warner Norcross and Judd by the name of Vito Cherevino. He has got a background in mechanical and electrical engineering, I believe. Correct?
That's right, I do.
Okay. And you are now a patent law attorney dealing with patent law and intellectual property, right?
That's right. So I work at Warner Norcross. I'm a partner there. I've been doing patent law exclusively for 9.5 years for auto suppliers and others in the industry.
I think what I'm intrigued by was the last line you left off there, Matt, that he was an intelligence officer in the Air Force. So how does that fit into all this?
Sure. Happy to talk about that. So after college, I joined the Air Force 2001, served for 4 years, first sent to Texas for intelligence officer school. And from there, I asked to go abroad, and they sent me to North Carolina.
Well, same thing.
So, right. Well, outside the cities, yeah. Right.
So my customers were pilots, F-15E pilots, and the backseaters. We called WISOs, and I provided them with information. Most of it was of a classified variety, information about their targets or their flight route or what they can expect to give them more situational awareness when they're there.
Yeah. All right. What attracted you to that line of work in particular?
Well, it was very interesting, and it still seems that way to me. It's exciting work. It's a team environment. There are no individual successes, I believe, in the Air Force, and just like in private practice now, everything is team-oriented. It's fast. It's dynamic. Change is constant. The technology was constantly improving in the Air Force. The jet may stay the same and look the same, but the black boxes inside of it were constantly improving and
sure.
and being more robust. The tactics were changing as the mission changed. It was very exciting.
Mm-hmm. So after 4 years in the Air Force, then law school?
Then law school.
Where at?
At Michigan State.
Okay.
And
make you happy, man.
Go green. So,
Go white. That's right.
You're right.
That's right. So from Michigan State, I clerked at Warner. I worked in the Grand Rapids office for 7 years. I laddled over to our Southfield office, and where I've been the past 2.5 years.
Ah, okay. So, how you clerked, and then, but what do you see is the parallels between the military, automotive, and tech industries? What, obviously, if you did intelligence, tech would be part of that, right?
That's right. That's right. So, what's common to both is that technological change is the only constant. So as I was mentioning in the aircraft, the sensors were always improving.
Mm-hmm.
And in many cases, there are technological overlaps. So aircraft use radar for low-level nighttime terrain avoidance. And we're now seeing radar being implemented in vehicles now and also in the future for level 4 and level 5 autonomous vehicles. And both military aircraft use sophisticated cameras as well as autonomous cars. And so there's some technological overlap. There's the constant change and improvement, and there's the team-oriented environment in the workplace.
Hmm. Yeah, I hadn't thought about that, but the stuff they use in for autonomous vehicles, the stuff they're using was probably a lot of it was originally developed for the military.
Absolutely, absolutely. So radar is a classic example.
Sure, LIDAR.
LIDAR, radar, the EO sensors, electro-optical sensors on aircraft, and now we're seeing that those applications migrate into commercial applications for autonomous travel, and it's very exciting.
Have you done any work with M-City or the new center out at Willow Run? Are you going to be working with them at all?
Many of my colleagues have. I myself have personally not been out there, but it's very fascinating work. And yes, it's certainly I'm happy to see that in our own backyard.
Talk a little bit about the relationships that you see between the tech world and the automotive world, the level of collaboration there that's been brought about by autonomy and other things.
We've seen it increasing. We see it in the papers. We see it in our own practice. It's public knowledge that Argo AI was brought in by Ford, and we had Cruise brought in by GM, and many OEMs are partnering with tech companies to bring that technology to Detroit. We also see smaller, nimble startups with new, exciting technologies partnering with tier ones, tier twos, and in some instances OEMs to commercialize technology where there's a mutual benefit to the parties.
Interesting. So the technology that's driving the industry forward and these collaborations and all that, what's going on with that then? Is that you kind of covered that, but it was one of your questions I was looking at.
Yeah. So we see the underlying issue here being the intellectual property. So we see that as a driving force in these relationships, in these collaborations. You know, in many instances, there's patents, there's underlying patent applications. There may be trade secrets. The trade secrets may cover software. It may be part of the machine learning in the car. Technology may relate to the radar in the car, the LIDAR in the car, the cameras in the car, or the integration of all of the above in the car. And there are many players. Many people are bringing their tools to the table, and it's becoming a team effort within the industry.
It's just sort of just an observation after covering this for 38 years. Usually the big companies are not particularly innovative. They have to get the little companies in that are full of all those entrepreneurs. And I'm seeing that really now with the hidebound OEMs here in this this area of the state, right?
Yep.
You know, so they realize that they internally they're just they're a bunch of bureaucrats. So they need to for the technology aspect, they really need to work with the littler companies, smaller companies. They're very nimble and smart, and probably staffed by very young folks who have grown up in this technology, right?
Absolutely, that's my view as well. I share that view, and the OEs are not too proud to admit that. I think, and I think we're just being honest with ourselves that many new exciting ideas are coming from outside traditional business models, and it's important to integrate that into the supply chain, and its collaborations with IP are a big part of that.
They used to make a big deal out of the sort of electronic product life cycle as opposed to the automotive product life cycle and how difficult it was to match those up.
Yeah.
How do you see that happening these days? It seems to be less of an issue these days.
Less of an issue these days, yes. And the electrical engineers, are teaming up with the automotive engineers, and we're seeing synergies there, and they're just making a much faster production cycle, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when a car takes 3 to 4 years to develop, and by then, gosh, if they had the technology of 3 or 4 years ago, it was ancient
right?
So you got to be very flexible. That's got to be really incredibly challenging.
Well, I think it's like what you said about the aircraft, though, where the airframe stays the same, but everything else changes.
Absolutely,
right?
That's exactly right. And in the airframe, the same it looks the same, but the black boxes improve, the cameras on the aircraft improve, the guidance systems on the weapons improve. Yep.
Yeah. I know there's a company here in Sterling Heights called Rave Computer that makes some of those black boxes for Air Force planes. And I remember asking the owner as these things are being assembled, what goes in there? And he says, I don't know. I don't want to know. I don't. it's just better if I don't know.
Yeah. All true. Yes.
Yes.
All right. So you got these tech companies that we just talked about that you're going to go up against the GMs and the Fords and the FCAs and the Toyotas. I mean, we've got them all here. Which very large companies, multi-billion, hundreds of billions dollar company, and then you got the little tech startup playing in that league. That's got to be tough, right?
It's tough. It's tough. But what helps is to have a patent or to have trade secrets and to protect them. And that's where I find myself helping our business clients. And you know, with respect to patents, it's important to file on the inventions before that public disclosure, or even before disclosure with the OEs. For example, it's uncommon for OEs to sign a non-disclosure agreement. So before you approach the OE as a tech company, it's makes good sense to have a patent on file first. With respect to the trade secrets, it's also important to have the right protections in place so that what you regard as a trade secret is also regarded by the law as a trade secret.
Yeah, it would be challenging.
Mm-hmm.
So you got some tips here under point five. Let's talk about those tips there.
Sure. So we like to say file early and file often. We're talking about your patentable inventions there. It's important also to have those applications on file before you're talking to potential commercialization partners. And it's important because outside of the U.S., that filing must happen first in order to obtain patent protection, for example, in Canada or in Europe, for example. Within the U.S., there's about a one-year grace period, but again, it's advisable to have that application on file with the patent office before these conversations take place. It's also important to, as another practice point, to train your people to understand the technology, understand what's trade secret, and have NDAs in place with your own employees, and have the employment agreements up to date.
Okay.
And, of course, call your lawyer, right?
And call your lawyer. That's right.
Early, so, speaking of early and often.
You know any good law firms they could call?
Well, that's right. And, yes, good counsel is critical to the process. And Warner Norcross and Judd, where I work, is a full-service law firm where we look at all these issues for you. And we have a wealth of experience both within the automotive industry and outside of the industry. While these issues are, we've been talking about autonomous technologies for the most part, all of these issues are equally applicable to other industries, defense, oil and gas, manufacturing, for example.
What about the issue of patents versus just keeping something a trade secret? I know that's a trade-off.
That is a trade-off.
A lot of people consider.
That is a trade-off. So generally, if it can't be patented very easily, for example, if it's source code, pure source code, and maybe machine learning or deep learning.
Formula for Coke, maybe.
Yeah, or formula for Coke, for example. It's best to keep that as a trade secret, have the right protections in place. Other technologies, though, are better off patented. Why? Well, because you're allowed to reverse engineer, if you could, Coke and derive the formula and now use it. Patents prevent your competition from reverse engineering your products and implementing it as their own, mm-hmm. right? Regardless of how they come into the technology, if it's your technology first, it's your right to practice it for 20 years. So things like radar, LIDAR, cameras, those are very heavily patented by many of the companies we've been talking about, Waymo, Uber, or alluding to, and the OEs and many suppliers in the Detroit area.
Yeah, in fact, Apple now, we discovered they had a lawsuit last week in Santa Clara where some Chinese fellow ran off with some of their trade secrets, and Apple disclosed that they have 5,000 people involved in their autonomous vehicle development, which amazed me when I read that.
And that's probably a small number as for some companies in Silicon Valley. We saw there was a dispute some time ago between an employee who left Google, Alphabet, with trade secrets, formed his own startup, sold that startup to Uber, and then Google slapped Uber with a trade secret lawsuit that was recently settled. But the currency in today's world is intellectual property, whether it's patents or trade secrets, and those are very valuable, and they can cause a lot of corporate unrest if they walk out the door.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the one challenge, I guess, for a small company would be it's kind of on the expensive side to get a patent, right? They got to be prepared for spending some dough, right?
It doesn't have to be, no. So without talking about numbers, it should be a straightforward process and a relatively inexpensive process as compared to the value of that technology to the company. Oftentimes, a patent is indispensable, and that can put in context appropriately frame, the costs involved.
And we have a patent office in Detroit now, don't we?
We do. We have a patent office in the old Stroh's building, just north of the downtown area, where we have several examiners and we have administrative patent judges administrating patent trials. Yes.
Is that speeding the process?
I was going to say you don't have to travel. That's one
there's less travel. Yeah. Certainly it's nice to have it close by. It's a recognition, I think, by Congress and the Patent Office that Detroit is a important and hotbed of innovation, both in the past and in the future.
All right. Vito Cherovino, partner in the Southfield office of Warner, Norcross, and Judd. How do people get a hold of you?
Sure. My phone number, I'd be happy to take their calls, 248-784-5179. And I can be reached by email at vciaravino@wnj.com.
All right. I want to thank Vito Cherovino and all of our guests here today. Richard Steenan, scaring the bejesus out of us on the cybersecurity front. Yep. James Karp, director of consulting at Raymond, talking about their acquisition of Trivalent Group and their big play into IT and cloud services, managed services. And we started off the show with Dave Weaver and Doran York of Great Lakes Angels talking to us about their new angel fund.
$18 million.
Wow.
That's
yeah.
Great.
So go out there and start a company and talk to David and talk to Doran, and they can help you out maybe. We'll be back again next week at 2 p.m. Eastern time. But until then, this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you've been listening to the M Squared TechCast here at PodcastDetroit.com.
Thanks for listening to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Join your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan, next Monday at 3 p.m. If you can't listen live, audio podcasts of the show can be found at podcastdetroit.com.